is brought to you by Head Start Basketball.
Hey, Hoopheads. Wanted to take a minute to shout out our partners and friends at Dr. Dish Basketball. Their Dr. Dish shooting machines are undoubtedly the most advanced and user-friendly machines on the market, and they truly accelerate skill development faster than ever. Learn more at drdishbasketball.com and follow their incredible content at Dr. Dish B-Ball on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. Mention the Hoopheads podcast and save an extra $300 on the Dr. Dish Rebel, All-Star, and CT models. Also, make sure to check out the new Dr. Dish Home Machine, which is perfect for these crazy times when gyms and schools are closed. Visit drdishbasketball.com for details. That's a great deal, Hoopheads. Get your Dr. Dish shooting machine today.
Hi, this is Stan Johnson, head men's basketball coach at Loyola Marymount University, and you're listening to the Hoopheads podcast.
Prepare like the pros with the all-new Fast Draw and Fast Scout. Fast Draw has been the number one play diagramming software for coaches for years. You'll quickly see why Fast Model Sports has the most compelling and intuitive basketball software out there. For a limited time, Fast Model is offering new subscribers 10% off Fast Draw and Fast Scout. Just use the code SAVE10 at checkout to grab your discount, and you'll be on your way to more efficient game prep and improved communication with your team. Fast Model also has new coaching content every week on its blog, plus play and drill diagrams on its play bank. Check out the links in the show notes for more. Fast Model Sports is the best in basketball. This episode is brought to you by the Ready State Virtual Mobility Coach. Dr. Starrett is a movement and mobility coach for players in the NFL, MLB, NHL, and NBA, plus a doctor of physical therapy. Kelly has created a program called Virtual Mobility Coach. Every day, Virtual Mobility Coach gives you guided mobility videos. It walks you step by step through Kelly's proven techniques to relieve pain, improve range of motion, and improve performance. Try it completely free for 2 weeks, and if you decide to continue, you can get 10% off for life using promo code HOOPHEADS10. Visit thereadystate.com/hoopheads and use code HOOPHEADS10 at checkout. Again, that's thereadystate.com/hoopheads and use code HOOPHEADS10 when you sign up to get 10% off for the life of your membership after your 14-day free trial ends.
We strictly deal with basketball, and that's the reason why our program has been very successful, because we got the right type of young men in our program that want to be successful on the basketball court, but they also take care of their business off the court and in the classroom in the community.
Jermaine Kimbrough is in his second season as an assistant men's basketball coach at Loyola University Chicago. A native of Northeast Ohio, Kimbrough spent the previous three seasons as an assistant coach at the University of Wyoming. Before heading to Wyoming, Kimbrough served one season at the University of Nevada, where he helped the Wolfpack to a 24-win campaign in 2015-2016. Kimbrough spent the bulk of his career at Cleveland State University, where he served nine seasons as an assistant coach under Gary Waters. During his tenure with the Vikings, Kimbrough was a key part of four postseason appearances, including an NCAA tournament and three trips to the NIT. Jermaine was a prep standout as a player at Shaker Heights High School in Cleveland, earning All-League honors on four occasions and All-City accolades three times. He began his collegiate playing career at St. Catherine College before transferring to Virginia Tech, where he played two seasons before graduating with a degree in psychology. Upon graduation, Kimbrough moved right into the coaching ranks, first serving as an assistant at Howard College before moving on to Cleveland State as director of ops. After a season at CSU, he spent 1 year as the director of operations at Massachusetts, and then one season at Purdue Fort Wayne as an assistant coach before returning to Cleveland State. We recently launched the Hoopheads Mentorship Program. We believe that having a mentor is the best way to maximize your potential and become a transformational coach. By matching you up with one of our experienced mentors, you'll develop a one-on-one relationship that will help your coaching, your team, your program, and your mindset. The Hoopheads Mentorship Program delivers mentoring services to basketball coaches at all levels through our team of experienced head coaches. Find out more at hoopheadspod.com or shoot me an email directly, mike@hoopheadspod.com. Our roster of shows is growing, so don't forget to check out all our other podcasts on the Hoopheads Pod Network, including Thrive with Trevor Huffman, Beyond the Ball, the CoachMaze.com podcast, Players Court, Bleachers and Boards, The Green Light, and our team-focused NBA pods, Cavaliers Central, Knuck If You Buck, 305 Culture, Hashtag Lakers, Motor City Hoops, X's and O's NBA Breakdown, Spanning the Spurs, LA Hoops, and the Wizards Hoops Analyst. We're looking for more NBA podcasters interested in hosting their own show centered on a particular team. Email us info@hoopheadspod.com if you're interested in learning more and bringing your talent to our network. Get ready to listen and learn from the experiences of Jermaine Kimbrough, men's basketball assistant coach at Loyola University, Chicago. Hello and welcome to the Hoopheads podcast. It's Mike Klinzing here with my co-host Jason Sunkel. And tonight we are pleased to welcome to the podcast at long last, Jermaine Kimbrough from Loyola of Chicago, assistant coach. Jermaine, welcome to the Hoopheads pod.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it. I'm honored to be a part of this. And anytime I can give back to the basketball community, it's great. And I'm super excited to be here. And hopefully you can tell by the passion and excitement in my voice, I've been waiting to do this for a long time.
We've been working to try to get this thing together. And as we will find out as we go through the episode, the life of a Division I assistant basketball coach, sometimes your life is not your own. Sometimes your head coach makes decisions about what you're going to do and where you're going to be. And sometimes that precludes you from joining a podcast that you've been trying to get on the schedule for a while.
Yes, yes. It's one of those things where, you know, you find out very quickly as an assistant that, you know, your time is not your time. You're on everybody else's time, whether that's the players, the, you know, your head coach who you're working for, and just putting time into it. The good thing about it is when you love the game and you're passionate about it and you love what you do, you don't count the clock. You know, we just don't punch the clock. You time goes by, but you're still having fun doing what you do on every single day. And for me, it's always been about impacting young men. And I love the game of basketball, love breaking down film, love working guys out, love getting guys better. And it's been a big, big part of my journey. This is my 21st season as a Division I assistant, and I'm still going at it, man. I'm still learning every single day and been blessed to kind of just, you know, been blessed to be a part of a staff that we have here at Loyola Chicago and learning under Coach Moser.
All right. So I'm going to break from protocol here. And instead of going back in time to when you were a kid as my first question, let's just take us through your day today as an assistant coach so that people have an idea. You and I were talking a little bit before we started recording about the sacrifices that you have to make and the amount of time that you have to put in order to have a successful program. So walk us through your day today from when that alarm went off to sitting down to do a podcast with Mike and Jason at 10:41 p.m. Eastern time. Just give us an idea of the things that went into your day as a Division I assistant college basketball coach.
Well, you know, every day my alarm goes off at 5:45 in the morning. And, you know, I get up, I work out, I jump on the Peloton bike, and I do that every single day just to try to stay fit and you know, eating right. And because you need to take care of your body mentally. You got to burn that, you know, that extra stuff off, man. You need it every morning. And, you know, I probably work out for about an hour and then I head into work. And, you know, once I get to the office, we're normally in there around, you know, 8 a.m. And we're working, man, to the sun, from the sun up to sundown. And we'll probably meet as a staff around 9 a.m. And it's funny because nighttime is when you study and during the day is the test, you know, working here at Loyola. You got to come in with thoughts and ideas and how you're going to make the program better. And the great thing about working for Coach Moser is he wants to hear from everybody. So, you know, we study into the night watching film and then we get up, you know, work out, go into the office, and we're meeting probably from 9:30 a.m. till right up until about 5 minutes of practice. And it's crazy because we got, you know, seven guys in our office, and they all got laptops. And we're all sitting in coach's office with laptops with something on your computer to show him on how we can get the program better offensively and defensively, player development, you know, whether it's, you know, studying different teams or they're studying our team. And we're in there. I mean, we're just breaking down film. We're talking basketball. We game planning. We're talking about the scout. We come up with a practice plan. And it's almost like a think tank. room, and we're just bouncing our ideas off, and then we come up with a game plan, and then we go downstairs, and coach is a very passionate, high energy guy. Like, he doesn't lose that. It's not one day go by that he doesn't have the energy at a high level. And we'll watch film with our guys for about 30 minutes. Our get better tape, we call it get better tape, from the day before, whether it was a game, whether it was practice. We watch film every single day with our guys. And our guys, you know, our guys watch film and they learn from it. And we grow them as basketball players. We expand their IQs here at Loyola. And you got to be a basketball junkie to love this, because we spend a lot of time on the court and in the film room. And we practice our normal hours. And then afterwards, we go upstairs back into the office and we watch film again. We watch practice as a staff. We take notes. And then, you know, we start our day over. You know, tonight, it's funny because tonight Drake played. We played Drake this weekend. You know, so we all got together with coach, and, you know, we sat around as a staff and we watched the game and we game plan together. And it's unique because, you know, that's the reason why, you know, we've had so much success here over the last 4 years, you know, coming off of Final Four and two NITs and then with a chance to get back to the NCAA tournament this year. We just got to take care of business, you know, the next five games. So it's a journey. You know, I literally just got home and I left. You know, I got in the office around 8 o'clock this morning. So it's every single day. But you know what? You love it. You know, you learn and you grow from it. And it's the reason why we're successful. And I'll tell you, it's nothing like winning.
isn't that the truth? It makes all that work that much more enjoyable, clearly, when you can put some W's on the board. You guys have put a bunch of W's on the board this year. What's been the key to your success this season? What's special about this team?
You know, that's a great question, because, you know, everyone is trying to compare it to the Final Four team. And, you know, you can't really do that right now until after the season, if you really want to compare. But what makes this team unique in its own is we got high character young men in our program. We got five seniors that believe in, not buy in, but they believe in everything about our culture. And, you know, our culture is something you see in how we play, you know, whether it's a culture play, whether it's given a verbal, whether it's how hard we practice. You know, it's very enjoyable when, you know, you can spend so much time watching film as a coach and your players do the same. You know, technology is great, because now we can send whatever I watch tonight, I can send that to our guys to watch on their own. And you know what? They're all going to watch it and they're all going to have an answer. So this team is late. We got great leaders. You know, our team GPA is a 3.5. Those are the type of young men we're around. I heard a coach say one time, you know, I either want to coach a pro or I want to coach guys that's going to be CEOs and run their own companies one day. And I tell you, man, we got 13 scholarships, and there's no doubt I think all 13 guys one day can run their own business and be CEOs or doctors or whatever it is that they want to be. There's not a better group to be around when you're around high character young men. It's enjoyable to come to work every single day. It's enjoyable to prepare these young men every single day, whether it's for the game or for the game of life. And it's enjoyable as an assistant coach to be here at Loyola Chicago.
What's the balance when you start thinking about that and the quality of the kids that you have that are part of your program? What's the balance between recruiting for those characteristics of kids that are going to fit into your culture versus having that culture established where you bring a kid in and then you're able to acclimate them to the culture, if that question makes any sense? So what's the balance between what the kid's natural tendencies versus how much does the culture of the program influence the kids once they're in the program?
Well, the culture has a lot to do with it too. And to be honest with you, the culture actually picks the player. You know, before the COVID hit, normally you can bring guys on campus. They can spend time with your players. And our guys are they're like assistant coaches, man. Like if you bring a kid on campus, he'll tell you right away, coach, you don't fit our culture. You know, our guys want to hang out with recruits when they come on campus for official visits. And I tell you, it's our culture. We have so many layers to our culture that it's hard for any guy, one guy, to come in and try to penetrate that with the being negative. And we got the right guys in our program, the right leaders. And as an assistant coach, when you out recruiting, you know, for us, and just talking to Coach Moser on a day to day basis, and how we vet and go through so much information and detail, you know, I don't want to use the word ridiculous. But we go through it with a fine tooth comb. Like we sit down, we evaluate the character, you know, the basketball piece. We talk to everyone around the kid. We spend as much time with that kid, not just one coach, but everybody that's able to talk to this young man. We talk to him. We gang recruit, man. And, you know, we all come back with our own evaluations, and we try to pick the right guy that's going to come in and fit our culture and actually take our culture to another level. And we got young men in our program right now that came in as the best player on their high school team. And right now they're not playing a lot of minutes as a freshman, but you know what? They show up every single day and practice and they work hard because our seniors do a great job of leading them. Our seniors do a great job of showing them the way, you know, so when they're gone, they can pass that torch on to them. And that's how you keep your culture strong. And our guys do a great job of that.
What does it look like from a recruiting standpoint when you're out on the road or you're watching film? What are some of the things? And again, we don't have to talk basketball skills because obviously there's a level of talent that a kid has to have in order to be able to play at the Division I level. But let's think more along the lines of those intangibles. What are you looking for that is going to help you to understand whether or not a kid's going to fit into your culture there at Loyola?
They're externals. What I mean by that is, you know, I want to know where they come from. I want to know, you know, their parents. I want to know what type of parents they have, the home, the upbringing, you know, who they hang with, who they're around, because that tells you a lot right there. If they're coachable, are they a multiple sport athlete? Do they just play one sport? Do they play baseball? Do they play football? What else do they do in their extra time? It's a lot of things that go into that. The externals are the most important thing because, you know, everybody's going to miss jump shots and everybody's going to, you know, I always tell young men, man, you're probably going to fail at the game before you succeed. It's the guys that learn how to continue to bounce back. Like, you're not just going to be successful like you were in high school. Even when you try to play professionally, you're not going to be as successful in college as you were in the NBA or in the pros. Like, it's a learning curve. But the most important thing you got to have is character. You got to have guys that got drive and passion, that know how to bounce back from adversity, that's willing to put the time in. And again, it's not going to be perfect. But you know what? They are for the team. You know, we give you an example. We got a young man on our team, two guys on our team, Tay Hall, who, you know, was all conference, preseason all conference last year, started the first seven games for us this year. He's coming off the bench right now. And it's not because he did anything wrong. It's just something we needed a different spark. And you know what? He's still cheering. He's still coming off the bench right now. He's still scoring. He's still playing minutes. He's for his teammates. He's happy. He's still playing defense. Like, it's no issues. And that's those are the young men that you win with. You know, guys that's not selfish. And the more and more you can find those type of guys, they're very rare. But if you can get a group of them together and then bring those guys into your culture. And we spend a lot of time on culture. Every single day, we're trying to build our culture up. We're giving our guys some type of information to get them to understand a strong culture. We're always educating them on that. And that's something we really believe in.
What does that look like? Is that sharing a story with them? Is that giving examples? Is that pulling out a quote and talking about it? Is that having the guys communicate with each other, with the coaching staff? What does that daily culture building look like at Loyola?
Well, for us, every single day, we spend time with our guys. And you know, I always go, I always think of this, you know, when I think of our culture. You know, Coach Moser always talks about, you know, one of his famous quotes is, you know, how you think is how you feel is how you act, and how you act is what defines you. And everywhere in our locker room, there's a coded message. When you look on the wall, whether it's a basketball message, whether we're giving them quotes, and it starts from the top down. Our culture starts from the top down. It starts with Coach Moser, and he's culture every single day. It's not a day that he takes off, and it's not about culture. We treat everybody with respect, and we care for each other. We love each other. It's a brotherhood. It's family. Our guys love hanging with each other. They trust each other on and off the floor. You know, I've been doing this for 21 years, and it's hard to find a culture or coach teams that don't have any hiccups. And if we got film at 3 o'clock, everybody's there at 2:45. Everybody's there getting treatment. Like we don't worry about or have to deal with any off the court issues. We strictly deal with basketball. And that's the reason, you know, why our program has been very successful, because we got the right type of young men in our program that want to be successful on the basketball court, but they also take care of their business off the court and in the classroom, in the community. And when you can spend less time worrying about saving someone's life and helping them become a better basketball player, you get the results that you see right now at Loyola Chicago.
Yeah, absolutely. I think when you as a coach are able to put your faith and your trust in the young people that are part of your program, that they're going to make the good decisions that they need to, whether or not you're there as a coaching staff by their side or whether they're just out, you know, in the school community, it just makes everything a lot easier, and it makes your program have the opportunity to have the kind of success that you guys are having this year. When you think recruiting, this is a question that I always like to get people's takes on, and you're going out to evaluate a player. Obviously, there's two settings where you're going to watch that player. You're going to see him play with their high school team, and you're going to see him play with their AAU team. So when you look at those two different environments, how do you weigh what you see in those two environments, and what are you looking for? Do you look for specific things in each one of those settings, maybe something different in AAU that you look at in high school? Do you put the whole picture together? Just talk about how you balance seeing a kid play with their high school team versus seeing them play with their AAU team in the summer.
You know, that's another great question, because, you know, so many people put, you know, so much on AAU nowadays. And AAU is good. It's a great environment because you get a chance to see a young man compete against talent that you probably wouldn't compete against in high school. But I think high school is the foundation piece. I'm old school, so I'm going to always start with high school because I think your high school coach knows you a little bit better because of the classroom setting, because of the other teachers that's involved. You know, dealing with the leadership skills, because you're probably a little bit better of a leader and leading your own program at a high school level as a player, more so than AAU, because you're playing with so much more talent than AAU. And I think you really get a chance to know who you are with your high school team. And I think AAU is a big component of it, too, because I think you also get a chance to see a young man compete at a higher level in AAU. So I try to balance both of them, but I also take with the high school coaches saying, you know, a little bit more seriously because of, you know, the academic pieces there. He sees the kid every single day. He's involved with him, and he knows the parents. He knows his home life. He knows who he is in the classroom. And so they spend a little bit more time, but I also value the AAU coach. You know, who are you when you're uncomfortable, when you're not in your environment? Who are you? And I think the AAU coach can give you a really good picture of a young man when he's not in his own environment and he's uncomfortable. And I think the AAU coach plays a big part in that. And some of the things that I look for is leadership, toughness, and how hard you play. And a lot, I know that's very, you know, simple, but it's hard to find in today's game where you can get a young man to play with a high motor every single day and play with some toughness and play through some adversity. So I try to start with that foundational piece first. And then it's obvious you got to have the basketball skill set, depending on what program you're recruiting for. And I know here at Loyola, we really want skilled guys, guys that can dribble, pass, and shoot. If you watch us play, everybody on the court can dribble, pass, and shoot. We play with four guards and a big. So we got to play with size. We got to play with guys that can shoot the ball, can dribble the ball, that can pass. And I think the X factor for us is IQ. We run a ton of plays. We run a lot of offense, and our guys got to think quick. We're very detailed in our scouts. We're very detailed in how we run our program. And we got to have guys that can think quick and got a high IQ, basketball IQ, that can also do the work here as a student athlete here at Loyola Chicago. And that's a big part of who we are and what we look for.
All right. So share with the parents of high school basketball players and maybe with high school basketball players themselves. One of the things that you just said is how important basketball IQ is. And I think anybody who knows the game, you can walk into a gym and sit down and within the first probably 30 seconds to a minute, you can watch the game and you can tell me who the best player is on the floor, regardless of whether that player missed two shots or made two shots or whatever. It's just the kid, I always describe it as that kid's a basketball player. And those are the people that you're looking for. So if you had advice for a kid who's a high school player or for the parent of a high school player who wants to play college basketball, what's some advice that you would give to them about what they should be doing as an AAU basketball player in the summertime? Because that's, I think, probably where we run into the most problems of kids playing selfishly to try to get the attention of college scouts. So what advice would you have for players and parents of high school, of high school athletes?
Well, for me, I would tell them just like I tell my two sons. One of my sons played at Washington State for Ernie Kent and ended up playing at Wyoming too for Allen Edwards. And then now I got another son that's, just left prep school and now he's going in junior college. And I always tell him, I say, look, here's the deal. You want to play Division I basketball, but what are you doing every single day to separate yourself? And I think it's obvious you got to work on your basketball skill set. But what are you doing every single day to separate yourself? And then the advice I will give young people today is I think you got to have a motor, a high motor. I think you got to play hard. I think you got to be the best condition. I don't necessarily think you got to be the best shooter, but I think that it helps to be able to shoot the basketball because that's the way the game is going. So I tell young people all the time, really work on shooting the basketball, really work on being able to handle the basketball, passing the basketball, but more importantly, playing the right way. How hard do you play on defense? Do you pick your man up 94 feet? Do you turn him? Offensive rebounding, boxing out, all the little things add up. And sometimes I think young people get thinking it's just about scoring points or, being the main guy on the team. And that's not necessarily what college coaches look for. When we come in the gym, depending on what program, I've been recruiting for 21 years. And I always tell people, I don't recruit players, I recruit programs. I want to know the best programs in Ohio that wins, the St. Edwards, the Shaker Heights, the Garfield. I want to know the best programs because it's a reason why those programs are winning. And we want winners as college coaches. You know, if you think back to our 2018 Final Four team, they had nine guys on that team that won state championships. Not necessarily double figure scores, but nine state championship teammates all together on that Final Four team. Those guys were winners. They coming from winning programs. So when you look at a young man today, I'm not necessarily looking at the skill. I want to know what program is he coming from? Who has he been under? as a player? Who is he learning from? Because now if I bring that winner from that program into our program and I'm coaching them hard and I'm doing the things that I need to do as a coach here, hey, I know he's not going to fold on me. I know he's not going to fold on me. I know he's going to give me everything he got. And when it gets hard and we hit adversity, I know he's going to fight through. You know, you want to build your team and be around winners. And we got right now we're, you know, 17-3, 12-1 in the Missouri Valley. And we got one guy in double figures. We got one guy in double figures. Everybody else is like 9, 10. And then I think it's one guy at 16. We got one guy. So that should tell you everything you need to know about our program. We don't care who scores. We don't. You gotta build your program around guys that's unselfish, you know, guys that care about the program, the culture, that want to win. And that's the most important thing for us when we go out and we look for that. That's the best advice I can give parents. You want your son to be around a winning program. That's what they're going to look for.
Hey, coaches, parents, and group leaders. I want to introduce you to our newest sponsor, SnapRaise. SnapRaise is the nation's largest digital donation platform built to help teams, youth groups, and clubs raise money quickly and efficiently without selling products. SnapRaise builds your group a customizable campaign website, and students use their mobile devices to connect and engage with their biggest fans. My son's high school team used SnapRaise this season, and our team raised all the money they needed to fund their season and then some. Getting SnapRaise started is quick and free. Just visit SnapRaise.com and you'll get connected to a local SnapRaise expert in no time. That's so underrated, is that winning mentality, and whether or not it's translatable to the next level. When you think about players who put up big numbers on a losing team, and at a certain point you become almost immune to the losing. You just don't, it doesn't bother you as much as it probably should. Jason and I actually have this conversation all the time about our hometown Cavs. And, you know, when you're tanking as an NBA team to try to get a high draft pick, and how damaging that can be at a certain point. You might be able to do that for a year, but if you try to lose for 2, 3, 4 years in a row, man, that gets tough to be able to try to overcome that and have the kind of culture that you need, especially with young players. It becomes a huge, huge challenge. So let's go back in time to when you were a kid growing up and your experiences in the game of basketball. Tell us a little bit about your first memory of the game of basketball growing up, and we'll kind of work our way through what you were able to accomplish in the game as a player, and then we'll get into the beginning of your coaching career. So we're going to kind of spin it backwards.
For me, you know, I grew up early on the west side of Cleveland, and Cadell Recreation Center on West Boulevard. And that was the first time I actually picked up a basketball. And that rec center, literally saved my life, man. I spent every single day in the summertime. I don't know if you're familiar with, you know, Cadell Rec Center, but it's...
I lived on 103rd and Baltic.
Okay.
Right down by West Boulevard. So I lived there for like 2 years. So, yeah, so I know Cadell.
So I spent a lot of time there, and that's where it started. That's where the love for the game started at a very young age. And, you know, playing there at Cadell and then playing throughout the inner city of Cleveland growing up in the rec center. The rec centers in Cleveland helped me turn into the player I was when I played at Shaker Heights High School. And, you know, it's one of those things. We all have a love for the game. And that's the reason why we're on this podcast tonight, because we love it. We're passionate about it. And for me, you know, literally, I feel like basketball was a vehicle for me to get to where I am today. And the reason why I coach today is because I want to give back to the game. And the way I give back is by helping young people, because I felt like my coaches did the same thing for me. They helped me, and they gave me a path. They gave me a blueprint, to be who I am today. And it all started at Cadell Rec Center, man. It's funny. I was actually there at Cadell about a year ago, and I took some pictures. And man, time flies, man. It flies, and that's where it all started for me on the West at West Boulevard, right on right at Cadell Rec.
It does go fast. There's no question about it. You can look back, and part of you feels like, oh, that was just that was just a day or two ago. And then there's other parts of you that are like, oh my gosh, that was forever and a lifetime ago, back when I was a player. What's one piece of advice that a coach gave you as a player that still stands out to you in your mind today? Something that you remember the exact conversation, where they said it, what they said, who said it. What's something you remember that one of your coaches said to you over the course of your time playing with them?
You know, it's funny because I had a lot of coaches that meant so much to me growing up. I just didn't play for one coach. But the one coach I want to talk about is actually two of them. Bob Watson used to be the head coach at Shaker Heights High School, and he coached college basketball with George Raveling at Washington State and USC and Iowa. He was an assistant coach, and then he took over at Shaker Heights High School. And you know, the one thing that I learned from Coach Watson as a player, and the one thing he always told me was your identity as a ball player. You know, who are you as a ball player? You know, and you know, when a coach or your teammates see you every single day, what are they going to say about you? Are they going to say you somebody they can count on? Or you somebody that they can't rely on? Like it's either one of the two. Like when I show up and I come to practice, I want everybody to know I'm gonna have passion, I'm gonna have energy, I'm gonna bring it, I'm gonna play hard, regardless whether I score 0 points or I score 20 points, we win or we lose, you're gonna get the same person every single night. And that's something that has always, you know, stuck with me about regardless of the situation. Whatever adversity situation you're in, it doesn't matter. You should be the same player every night, regardless whether the ball is going in the hole or not. You should be the same guy every single night. And nobody should never question your heart and your toughness playing the game of basketball.
That's a great piece of advice. Yeah, that's awesome. That's awesome. You
know, yeah.
And I've heard that said in a lot of different ways, you know, be the same person every day. I've heard it said where, you know, be an everyday guy that, you know, yep, you're showing up regardless of what happens. And I think that there's a tremendous amount of value in that. And I think it's one of those things that it's very easy to say that's the kind of person I am. And as you know, it's very, very difficult to live up to that standard. That's something that if you can hold yourself to that standard, you've really got something.
Right. And I think as a coach right now, I mean, when you come to practice, you know who's going to show up every single day.
Yep.
Like you know what you're going to get from them. I think that's all coaches really ask for. I know what I'm going to get from that individual. You know, and then, you know, you have sometimes where you got guys on your team, you don't know who's going to show up. You don't know who he's going to be today. You know, it all depends on if the ball's going in the hole or if things are going right for him. He might show up, but if not, he might not show up. I never wanted to be that guy, and I learned that at an early age, you know, my ninth grade year at Shaker Heights High School playing for Bob Watson.
It's amazing when you think about that as a coach, and we've all, no matter what level you've coached at, everybody's coached players who are like the ones that you just described that are everyday guys that you know what you're getting day in and day out every single day. And then conversely, we've all coached guys who you have no idea one day to the next what kind of mood that player is going to be in and what kind of effort they're going to bring. And those guys are really, really difficult to deal with. And when you start talking about building the culture, you either have your culture where it kind of weeds those guys out from your program, or you get a guy who maybe has a difficult background, who maybe wasn't an everyday guy, but you get him in your culture, you get him surrounded by the right kind of people, and you help them to turn your life around. And I think that's something that when you're talking about, whether it's middle school basketball or high school basketball, especially where you're not getting to recruit kids to your program, but you're getting who walks in the door And I think that's one of the big responsibilities that high school coaches have, is to be able to relay those kinds of messages that Coach Watson shared with you there, that just, hey, you got to be have an identity and be an everyday guy that your coaches can count on. And that's transferable to everything. You think about any profession, you know, just think about what you're doing now. Coach Moser expects you to be who you are every day. He expects you to bring that enthusiasm. And it's not like, hey, I wonder which Jermaine's going to show up today. Is he going to be the guy who's clapping and bringing enthusiasm, or is, you know, a different day, he can be standing over in the corner? And I think it's a lesson that's applicable to, you know, every walk of life, for sure.
For sure. For sure. And it's something that I think every young man, you know, needs to have, you know, in their life, in their culture, and their characteristics of being an everyday guy.
All right. So talk to me a little bit about your recruitment, as you obviously have a very, very successful high school career at Shaker Heights. So you play 4 years of varsity basketball for Coach Watson. And at what point does college basketball come onto your radar? Was it something that you always knew you wanted to do? And then just tell me a little bit about the recruiting process, and then we can get into talking about what went on in your college career.
You know, for me, I always knew I wanted to play college basketball. And again, I played for a guy who played in college. Who coached in college at Washington State, Iowa, and USC for George Raveling, who's a Hall of Famer, you know, who's a legendary coach. So I used to hear all these stories, and the times I used to go over to, Coach Watson's house, I used to see all these plaques and photographs of teams from Iowa and Washington State, you know, and winning championships. And I'm like, man, one day I want to play at a high level and play in college. And it's something that I worked on every single day in high school. And I knew from the beginning I always wanted to play in college. And, you know, I'll end up leaving Shaker Heights and finishing my career at Virginia Tech, and came across some great coaches at Virginia Tech. Played for Bobby Hussey and Ricky Stokes at Virginia Tech. And then also played for some great assistant coaches at Virginia Tech, Donnie Marsh and Dean Keener, I've just been blessed to be around so many great coaches in my life. Randy Peel, you know, Mark Klein. I had all those guys as assistant coaches at the Division I level. And I think for me, the reason why I felt like I was always successful and, you know, and had a great career is because my foundation was great, you know, from my high school coaches and my AAU coaches.
Did you always know when you were playing that when you were done, you wanted to coach? Was that always on your radar, or was that something that once you got done playing, it came on your radar?
No, I always wanted to coach. And the reason why, and I said this earlier in the podcast, I said it was two coaches, you know, Bob Watson, and the other guy name is Al Slauson. Al Slauson was the head tennis coach at Shaker. He's in the Hall of Fame for high school tennis in Ohio. And he's the reason why I wanted to coach. he was the best man at my wedding, and much older than me, but he was a guy that, as a coach, he influenced so many people, at Shaker Heights High School in so many different ways. He just touched lives. He transformed lives, and the way he carried himself as a coach, as a teacher, you know, as a professional, is something that I always admired, and I always wanted to be him. Whether I was coaching college basketball or coaching high school basketball or teaching in high school, I've always had that teaching, burning desire to teach. And whether it was in high school or college, he was the guy that influenced me. His name is Al Slauson. I still talk to him to this day. He's a Hall of Famer, tennis coach, and he's a great coach, And he actually, you know, my 11th and 12th grade year, I spent a lot of time with him and talking to him about what is coaching all about? What is it? Why do people coach? Why do you want to coach? And he influenced me. And when I got finished, I went right into coaching because I knew exactly what I wanted to do.
How'd you build that relationship with him?
He was my high school math teacher. And I always tell people this too. Shaker Heights was I don't know if they make teachers like this when I was growing up, but teachers are, I don't know how the teachers are today, but when I was coming up in high school, we had some of the best teachers you can find. You know, I still have personal relationships with my high school teachers today. I can literally pick up the phone and call them. And that's the type of culture in the community that we had at Shaker when I was going there. And I always told him, man, I had that relationship with him in the 9th, 10th grade where we can sit and talk. He used to work me out in this in terms of, you know, the weight room and strength, and used to come in and talk to the team on leadership. He used to give us books to read throughout the summer. And it was just he had a mentor relationship with me. He drove me down to basketball camps. He came to visit me while I played at Virginia Tech. He was just there in my life. And that's what teaching is all about. And that's why he was the best man at my wedding. And he played a huge part of that. And that's the reason why I'm coaching today. And it doesn't have anything to do with basketball. It has something to do with transforming and helping young men get to where they need to get to in life. So it's a 40-year relationship for me, not just a 4-year relationship. When a kid comes to a campus, it's a bigger picture for me. And that's the reason why I do it.
That's a great story. And it's one that when you think about what you do as a coach, Jason's a teacher, I'm a teacher. When you think about what, you know, we try to do as teachers, as coaches, your impact has to go beyond the basketball piece of it, which anybody who's listening to the podcast tonight can hear your passion for the game of basketball come through loud and clear. And yet at the same time, you also have a realization that it's about more than just basketball. It's about developing young people into the best version of themselves, whatever that's going to be. They could be, maybe they're going to stay in basketball and they're going to be a professional basketball player and they're going to end up being a basketball coach or a basketball executive or whatever. Or maybe they're going to leave the game behind when their playing career is over and go and be a doctor or a lawyer or own a business or whatever it might be. But ultimately, as coaches and as teachers, what we try to do is we try to have that impact. And the fact that Coach Slauson had that impact on you is, I mean, that's incredible. It's an incredible story, especially considering that he wasn't a basketball coach. And that's an amazing story. That's somebody who, because you think about most kids, and you weren't a tennis player, I'm assuming.
No, I wasn't.
Okay. So, you know, most of the time when you make a connection with an adult as a kid, you're probably making a connection with somebody who has something directly in common with an activity that you're doing. So I'm sure that that's a pretty unusual relationship. I doubt there's very many coach of a sport that I didn't play athlete relationships out there like the one that you just described.
That's correct. Yep. That's hard to find. And, you know, he was like that for not just me, for many students. And, you know, his name will always go down in history at Shaker Heights High School and in those hallways because he meant so much to everyone. And in that community, like I said, that community is big time. And the students that they develop, the people that they develop, are successful. And it's funny we're talking about this because I always hear Coach Moser talk about when we recruit guys here at Loyola, he wants to recruit guys and coach guys that he's going to be friends with for the rest of their life. He just don't want to coach them. He actually wants to be friends with them afterwards. Like, he wants a relationship.
Right.
It's a friendship. And I think that's a very unique perspective on it, because, you know, some guys coach you just to coach you. And then when your 4 years is up, it's up. You know, I've been very fortunate to work for coaches like Gary Waters and Porter Moser. And those guys, man, these guys are high character coaches that really believe in developing young people, but also having a relationship with these young men. And, you know, hopefully one day I'm at your wedding. You know, hopefully one day I know your family. That's what this whole thing is about. It's not about basketball. Basketball is a minute piece to it. It's a bigger picture. And the bigger picture is it's a 40-year relationship, man. I want to be there, you know, on your wedding day. I want to know your children. I want to be able to speak to you, you know, afterwards, you know, after this, man. And we're talking about this, and it was funny because I just heard the head coach at Temple, the other day talk about John Chaney and what he meant for him as a mentor. And those are, you know, the organic, man. It's organic. It's natural. It's, you know, old school coaching, man. They have relationships with their players for a lifetime.
Yeah, I think that's one of the things that is really, really critical to having a good experience. And I look back on my time playing at Kent State, and one of the things that I always, I don't know if regretted is the right word, but I always felt like our coaching staff while I was there, we didn't necessarily build that type of relationship that you're talking about. And for me, one of the best experiences of my life occurred in this past year. I got reconnected to actually three of my coaches from the time I was at Kent. And I probably haven't talked to, I maybe ran into one of our assistants, Coach Dave Grube. I maybe run into him one time actually at a Cleveland State game, probably, I don't know, 15 or 20 years ago, and got reconnected to Coach Grube through Coach Steve Moore at Worcester, who we had on the podcast. And he's like, hey, Coach Grube is right here in town, and let me connect you back to him. And so I ended up getting on the phone with Coach Grube and probably talking to him for an hour and a half. And it was like we had, you know, we had been apart. I hadn't talked to him for whatever, 20 years. And it was like, it was just like yesterday, and made you feel like, oh man, I should have, you know, we should have reached out to one another, you know, mutually to be able to reconnect. And then I also got connected back with Jay Smith, who was my assistant my freshman year, who's now at Michigan with Juwan Howard. And he was a coach at Central there for a while, at Central Michigan. And then Jim McDonald was my head coach at Kent. And I think Coach McDonald is about, he might be 83, 84 years old. And I gave him a call this summer, and I sat out on my deck, and he was a guy who I honestly haven't talked to him in whatever, 32 years or whatever, since I got done 30 years. Right. And had a 2-hour conversation with him, and the things that he remembered about my career, about my family, like, you know, I think about all the players that played for him, and he was asking me, you know, how my sister was, and, you know, mm-hmm. these different things. And it just made you realize that there was, you know, there obviously was a connection there. He obviously did care about it, but I'm not sure at that time that he necessarily knew how to, you know, how to foster that relationship. Right. But it was one of those conversations that I walked away from that conversation feeling so good that I had called him up and that we had gotten a chance to talk and reminisce. And it was just a lot of fun. And it makes you think, and it made me think, and I felt this way kind of at the time and immediately after I graduated, that I wish there had been, you know, a tighter relationship, and probably some of that was on them, and probably some of that was probably on me as a player. And, but I think those lifelong connections, what you go through as a coach and a player, especially at the collegiate level, is so emotional and so intense that it's almost, I don't want to say it's easy, but it feels like it's almost easy to be able to build those relationships just because what you're going through is such an intense experience. And I'm sure that you find that both back when you were a player and also now, I'm sure, as a coach.
Yes, I do. And again, I feel like, you know, I've been blessed, man, to as a coach, as an assistant coach, to be around, you know, some high level coaches that got it and understood, you know, what culture was and relationships and, you know, coaching basketball and great coaches. And now I don't think everyone gets that, but I've been blessed to be around coaches like that. And I was blessed to be around as a player. I was blessed to be around, you know, really good coaches that understood that it was about relationships. And it's the reason why I'm where I'm at today and the type of coach I am now. And I love when I get text messages or emails or, hey, coach, I'm looking to get into the business. Can you help me? Hey, coach, I'm getting married, man. Here's the date. Can you come? It's just one of those things that I get a joy out of that more than being ranked, you know, 22nd in the country this week, you know, because the rankings come and go, you know, nobody cares about that at the end of the day. But at the end of the day, when this is all said and done and I'm done drawing up plays, it's about relationships and the impact that you've had on young people. And for me, I think the biggest achievement that I can get as a coach is when a parent calls me, or parents, a mom and a dad called me and said, thank you for helping my son. He was struggling. Thank you for helping him grow. He's maturing. I'm seeing that he's maturing. I'm seeing that he's different. He told me about the conversation that you had with him. I mean, as a coach, that's what you, that's, those the feedbacks that you want to have. And again, it's basketball, and we use basketball as a vehicle to get guys better and to move on with their lives. But how are you impacting the next person? You know, how are you serving the next person? And that's what it's all about for me.
It really, I think, does come down to you're balancing those two things. You're balancing building that relationship with that young man and trying to get them to understand how they can be at their best, and be at their best on the basketball floor, be at their best in the community, be at their best as a student. And when you do that, then you're going to build that relationship. And as you said, it's just extremely valuable, and it's extremely gratifying when you have those kinds of conversations. I always say that there's nothing better than when the phone rings or you get a text message and the first thing that you hear or the first thing that you see is, hey, coach. Yeah. And, you know, that's just, there's nothing better than that. And I felt like when I called and spoke with Coach McDonald this summer and I said, hey, coach, and I could just hear kind of in his voice how appreciative he was that, you know, I had picked up the phone. And again, this is whatever. I graduated from college in 1992, so it had been a long, long time. But by the same token, you had that conversation, and it's kind of like an old friend. Like, you immediately fell back into shared memories and experiences that you had. And I left that phone conversation feeling, I can't even describe the feeling. Right. It was just a special feeling that to know that, you know, I had spent 4 years together with him as my head coach. And part of me during that intervening time between my career ending and that phone call, part of me felt like there was something that was missing. Like it was a little bit sad to me that connection wasn't maybe as strong as I would have liked it to be. And that phone call just made it all come back. And I think that was one of the, like I said, it was one of the richest experiences of my life, just because I hadn't spoken to him in years and years and years. So let's go back to you getting into coaching. What was your first experience like? You go to Howard College. Was it everything that you expected it to be? Was it different? Did you immediately love it? Just what was that first experience like when you go from, all right, I'm transitioning from playing to coaching? How are you feeling about that transition? Is it something you're immediately like, oh yeah, this is what I want to do for the rest of my life?
You know, I got thrown right into the fire. You know, when I graduated from Virginia Tech, Randy Peel, who's an assistant coach at Texas Southern, used to be the head coach at Winthrop. He was an assistant coach at Virginia Tech at the time. He connected me with Chris Jans, who's the head coach at New Mexico State. And I worked for Chris. Chris gave me my first opportunity as an assistant and in junior college. And, you know, I drive from Ohio, from Cleveland, Ohio, to Big Spring, Texas. And I pull up in Big Spring, Texas at around 7 p.m. The sun's going down. And, you know, Chris Jans brings me into his office and he says, hey, we got 5 kids that need to get picked up in Texas. Here's the keys to the van. It's a 15 passenger van. And, you know, it's going to take you 3 hours tonight, probably about 4 or 5 hours to get to where you're trying to go. So I'm driving. I get in the van around 8:30, my first day on the job of pulling in. And I'm making trips around Texas, picking up young men to bring them back to campus. And it was a great experience, man. I knew right then, you know, that this is something that I wanted to do for the rest of my life. And it's a great experience, man, when you can get thrown into the fire like that and you got a chance to start building those relationships right away. I'm talking about from the first pickup, I'm having a conversation with a young man about his life, his family, his basketball career, the expectations, what it's going to take, how you going to get there, giving him a vision, you know, helping him through his problems. Like, it started right away. And that's something that I always wanted to do. And And we had special teams when I worked for Chris Jans. And so he's a successful coach at New Mexico State. Everywhere he's been, he's won. And then from there, I left and I worked for Mike Garland, who was a longtime assistant for Tom Izzo, and learned everything I needed to know about Michigan State basketball. And Coach Garland was a great mentor of mine. And I left Mike Garland and I went to go work for Steve Lapis at UMass, who worked for Rolly Massimino at Villanova and won a national championship with Rolly Massimino, and learned a lot from Steve Lapis. And left Steve Lapis and worked for Dane Fife, who's now an assistant coach with Coach Izzo, who at the time was the youngest head coach in Division I. I think he got the job at 25 years old, 24, 25, and helped him turn that program around at IPFW. And then I went back to Cleveland State and I worked for Gary Waters for 10 years, who was a big mentor of mine. And he taught me so much about basketball, taught me so much about, you know, character and what type of coach you need to be and how to build a program and how to turn around a program. And left there and ended up working for Eric Musselman at Nevada, and been a new Eric prior to that. Knew the history of his father, who used to be the head coach for the Cavaliers. Eric kind of grew up in Ohio for a short time. And just all the coaches that I've touched over the years, I mean, it's been a journey. And, you know, I leave Nevada. I go work for Allen Edwards, who played at Kentucky for Rick Pitino and Tubby Smith, and went to three straight Final Fours and won, three championships, national championships. He was a winner. So I just been blessed to just be around, you know, unbelievable coaches, unbelievable people. And then I left Wyoming and came to Loyola, and here I am today. And I'm working for a Final Four coach in Porter Moser, who turned this program around. So I just been blessed, and it's been a great journey. It's been a great experience. And if I had to stop coaching tomorrow, I tell you, I had a great time doing it. And I made a lot of connections. I won a lot of games. I helped build programs. I helped turn around programs. And it's just been a great experience. I worked with great assistant coaches, friendships that's going to last forever. And I talk to those guys every single day.
Hey, hoopheads, we all hate ankle sprains, and they happen way too often. Ankle injuries are the number one sports-related injury. Arise is trying to change that. With the iFast, your athletes get preventative protection and full mobility. Athletes no longer need to wear bulky braces that limit performance and give mediocre protection. Anyone playing sports should be using these products. Keep your athletes in the game. Don't wait for them to get hurt to take action. Visit www.arise.com, spelled A-R-Y-S-E. And use the code HOOPHEADS to get 20% off the future of performance. That's ARYSE.com with promo code HOOPHEADS to get 20% off.
Jermaine, I have to ask you, you've met all these great people. I want to know, what is Sister Jean really like?
Sister Jean is, you would never meet a person who's 100 years old with so much energy and passion. Before COVID-19 hit, you know, when I first got to campus, and I'm like, wait a minute. So we're having an all staff meeting and she's running the meeting at 100 years old. Like this late, I couldn't believe it. She's 100 years old and she's running the meeting and speaking and talking as if she was still 50 years old. And I'm like, man, I pray that I can live to be 100 years old and to be able to think and still have the right state of mind and still be able to do the things that she was doing. It's unbelievable. I tell you, I hear her prayers every game. She prays for our guys every game. And I never thought I would hear this before, but I mean, she's pretty funny. And you know, she when she's praying, she always say, she'll say, you know, dear God, you know, I hope, you know, I pray that our guys come out and shoot 100%. I pray that our guys, I pray that the other team doesn't make a shot. You know,
that's awesome.
So it's fun just to hear and you know all the great things she's done and how much she's impacted our program here and how much she means to our program. And our guys still see her on FaceTime. She FaceTimes the team before every game and she prays for us. So, and she's 101 years old. Like it's amazing that she's still going strong, and God bless her soul, and hopefully she stays safe and throughout this pandemic.
She's technologically advanced using FaceTime. That's impressive. Yeah, impressive at 100 years old. I don't know if I can figure it out half the time. So
I tried FaceTiming Mike one time and he was like, "What are you doing?" So it's pretty impressive.
I gotta stay in my lane on technology. I can figure some stuff out. You throw some new stuff at me, I could be in trouble. So it's been interesting. What's been the biggest challenge with COVID this season? What's the biggest challenge that you guys have faced this season as a coaching staff and as a program?
Really, probably social distancing. You know, probably not spending as much time one-on-one because of, you know, the COVID. You know, probably not as, you know, you're not touching your guys as much. You know, everything is organized to where you see them at. They got to be distant, you know, 6 feet apart from each other. You got to be distant from when you're talking with them. You know, you got to have a face mask on. So it's probably just the intimate conversations to be able after practice to sit down, you know, kick your feet up a little bit, come in the office or talk on the floor and just hanging around a guy, you know, just spending that time with him at his apartment. You can't, you know, or going to see him and walking him to class, meeting him after class, bringing him back to the, like you're missing all those situations where you're a little bit more intimate and a little bit more one-on-one. I think that's been the biggest challenge, you know, for us, even though we still practice every day, you just don't touch them off the court as much because of the COVID.
Are you guys having class in person, online, some combination of it?
Online. Everything's online now for our guys. But school is starting back at Loyola. We got a few students on campus, but right now everything is still online.
Gotcha. Yeah. It's just, I mean, everybody's trying to figure out and trying to navigate it. And it's just been, it's been a challenge. And I think we're all thankful at this point, if you're involved in basketball in any way, shape or form, whether you're an athlete, a parent or a coach, any games that you get in at this point are just, I feel like it's all icing on the cake, because even you go back to September, October, and I think there was a chance that we weren't going to have a season, especially at the high school level. I think college, it was, you know, probably more likely that they were going to push forward and figure out a way to get it done. But regardless, I'm sure that every day you're thankful that, hey, at least we're getting a chance to get out on the floor and compete.
Right. Correct. And that's the big thing. You get out on the floor, you can compete. You know, I know some of the games are postponed, where we had to miss some games. But, you know, everything's going to be caught up hopefully by the end of the year, where everybody can be on the same page and getting ready for postseason play.
Absolutely.
Here soon.
Absolutely. All right. So when you look back over the totality of your career, what's something that you think that you were really good at coaching-wise right from day one? And then what's something that you feel like you came in and maybe weren't as strong at that over the course of your career – you've developed your ability in that particular area?
For me, off the court, I felt like I was always a natural at building relationships with the guys and mentorship with those guys. I had a natural connection. I always had a natural connection with players and just understanding them, players, coach, kind of walk through their shoes before and can relate to them. And just always having a relationship, open door policy, where guys can come talk to me about anything. And I think on the court, I've always taken pride in player development, getting guys better. You know, one of my big responsibilities at Cleveland State was working our guys out. Norris Cole, Cedric Jackson, you know, Brent Forbes, you know, all these guys had a cup of tea in the NBA. Norris Cole is a world champion. And I worked with those guys every single day. I mean, we had, you know, four NBA players at Cleveland State during my time there. So player development was a big piece of it. And I think as I went on, I've always had a love for the defensive side of the ball. And as you continue to grow, you know, in today's game, you start realizing, I think the most successful coaches are two-way coaches. They're great on both ends of the floor. I don't think you can be a coach that's just one offensive-minded coach. I think you got to be great on both ends. And that's something that over the last, you know, 3 to 5 years of my career is just really having a better understanding of the offensive side and the defensive side, and just also having a better understanding of how to continue to develop the right culture and having the right people around the culture and that fits the culture and developing a staff to help you win at a high level. And that's the biggest thing. I think you got to be a two-way coach. And now I'm glad I'm working under Coach Moser, because I think Coach Moser is one of the best offensive genius coaches I've ever been around. And he's a two-way coach. That's why we're one of the top defensive teams in the country this year and one of the best offensive teams in the country. We work it on both ends of the floor.
So you've been at a lot of places and you've worked under a lot of great coaches. And at each one of your stops, you've talked a little bit about some of the things that you've learned from each of the programs and coaches that you've been fortunate enough to work with. As you're going through and you're working for them as an assistant, how are you cataloging the things that you're learning? And are you cataloging those things and starting to think about what you might do if you were to get an opportunity as a head coach to run your own program? So how are you sort of preparing along the way for maybe it's just your next assistant's job, maybe it's a next opportunity that might come your way to be a head coach? How are you organizing all of the things that you've learned? Do you have computer files? Do you have old-fashioned three-ring binders? Are you taking notes in a journal? Just what's your way for keeping yourself organized as you look at your professional life and where you're headed in your career?
Well, for me, I have a video database of everything that I want to teach, whether it's our offense and our defense and our drills. I have a video database of all, probably from Cleveland State to Nevada to Wyoming to Loyola Chicago, a video database, but I also have every practice, and then I have a journal. And in that journal, I have it broke down based off offense, defense, player development, culture. And offensively, each tab would have transition, you know, secondary, the type of offense I want to run. And then from defense, based off our shell, our positioning, whether it's pressing, half court defense philosophies, terminology. All of these things are in a journal, a three ring binder, and it's not a lot, but it's enough to get started, because I'm a firm believer to be great, you got to continue to learn. And I think I got a great foundation of what I want to be and who I am in terms of my identity on the defensive end of the floor and on the offensive end of the floor. And, you know, if you watch our teams play here at Loyola, I think I'm pretty sure that's how my teams are going to play. We defend. We're tough defensively, and if you watch us play, we our offensive philosophy is based off how you guard. So we just don't run offense. We run offense to offset what you do defensively. Each game is different. I think that's when you become a great offensive coach. When regardless of what you're playing against, whether it's zone, whether it's switching, whether it's non-switching, depending on what ball screen coverages that team is showing, you should have something offensively to be able to offset that. And then I think for me, I think you have to grow your kid's mind, your player's mind, to be able to understand how to play the game, not just a play, but how to play the game the right way and to have feel for the game. And I'm a big component of that as a coach, teaching your guys how to play the game the right way.
How do you do that? Like, what does that look like when you're trying to help a player increase their basketball IQ, which is kind of what you're talking about here? How do you help them to develop a better feel? What does that look like from a player development standpoint, from a team development standpoint?
You got to watch film. We watch film here every single day. We call it get better. And as assistant coaches, yeah, we might watch it as a team, but each assistant coach have 2 to 3 guys that they watch film with on an individual basis. Like if you see us going to practice here at Loyola Chicago, we got notebooks and computers with us on our way down to the floor, everybody. So when practice is over with, before we go watch film as a staff, we might spend 5 or 10 minutes every single day with our players just having clips. And it's funny, you're talking to me about this because our video coordinator, Pat Wallace, I was like, we were talking today. I'm like, we got 7 video coordinators on our staff. We just don't have one. We got 7 because everything is about video nowadays. And we actually send video to our guys to watch individual clips with notes on them. And okay, this is how this cut should look like. This cut needs to look more like this. This is a bad cut. So you need to take, like, we are so attention to detail, whether how to cut, how to pass, whether you're stepping into your shot the right way, setting screens on what half of the body do you want to set the screen to be able to get a better angle for the ball handler, whether it's the outer third or the middle third or the inner third of the body. Whether we're setting a tilt screen, like everything is detailed. And that's how guys learn. Like if I'm going to be honest with you, our terminology and what we do here at Loyola, we got a wall of culture. We got a wall of culture here. And for our culture, the way we teach you, regardless whether you're watching our game or the Drake or Northern Iowa game tonight, our guys can be able to look at that game and use our terminology to dissect that game and still know what's going on in the game. So you're not just watching the game. So our wall of culture might say, reach for the lights. If I text the guys or I say something to our guy in practice, a player in practice, say, reach for the lights, he knows exactly what I'm talking about. I don't need to say anything else. I don't need to teach you because you already know the technique.
All right, so I got 2 questions here. So one, let's go with that terminology piece first. When you're talking about teaching that terminology, is that something that's just done because repetitively through practice, through meetings, through film, you're just repeating that terminology? Or do you guys have like an actual, for lack of a better way of saying, an actual dictionary that you put on paper for guys and say, here's some of the terminology that we use, or here's all the terminology that we use, or is it more organic?
It's both. Our wall of culture, you'll see every term that we use in our locker room. It's on paper and it's also on video. This whole summer, we spent so much time on Zoom with our players and we went through, our terminology just so they have a better understanding, through you through the rim. What does that mean? Okay, here's a great picture of it. And through this video, we're going to show you this is a great through you to the rim edit. And then reaching for the lights, escape the paint. It's just so many different things. So when we add it all up, now you get what you're getting right now, because now it's easier for us to coach our guys, because all I have to say is reach for the lights or throw you through the rim better, or, strong chest with resistance. Like they just get it and they understand it. And that's the great thing that I've learned here with Coach Moser, man. And he worked for Rick Majerus, and, Rick Majerus is a Hall of Famer, and you're getting everybody's learning every single day. It's something new every single day, and our guys get it. They understand it, and that's how we teach.
That's something I've been terrible at, is coming up with terminology. I'm the guy who likes to give the 2-minute explanations of the same thing that I just explained 2 minutes ago. I've always been, it's so valuable to have terminology that, as you said, you can take what could be a concept that might take 2 minutes to explain and just boil it down to 3 words that are cues that players automatically know what it is. That's so tremendous.
It's a coded message.
Absolutely.
For us. Coded message.
Absolutely.
And if, as long as you know the coded message, you can be successful.
Yeah, I don't think there's any way. Like when I look back on my coaching career, and I've really never been a head coach except for just coaching my own kids' AAU teams. But even on those teams, like I've done a bad job at times of naming drills. Like, all right, we're going to do this drill, and it's the one, remember, where we set it up like this. Instead of just having a name for it and teaching the kids, all right, here's what we got to go, I always end up being the guy who's the long-winded explanation. I've gotten better at it over time.
Hey, Mike, I got to interject here. Hold on a second.
Okay, go for it.
I've worked with Mike for many years, Jermaine. I've worked for many years at basketball camps. I think he does a fantastic job explaining it. I don't think he does a bad job. I think he does a great job. And I know maybe it's because I've worked for them for many years. When he says we're going to do this, I know exactly what he's meaning.
So right, I'm good. Well, I'm probably better at it at camp than I am in a practice.
But I want to be clear. I think Mike does a good job, and that's what I'm going to say.
Well, thank you, Jason. Thanks for jumping in and defending me against myself. I appreciate that. All right. So the other question though I had, Jermaine, about film, how do you guys balance out the positive versus the negative? In other words, when you're showing your guys film and you're sending them clips, how much of what you're sending them are, hey, here's a great job, this is what this cut should look like, or here's what this screen, this is exactly what it should look like, we need to see more of this, versus sending them stuff, hey, here's where you should have executed this backdoor cut like this, but instead you made this mistake? What's the balance between them seeing what they're doing well versus what seeing mistakes that they made that they need to improve on?
Well, I think the most important piece to that, Mike, is educating your guys that there's no such thing as, you know, don't have the mindset of it's negative. Have the mindset of getting better.
Yep.
And using words like improvement over, you know, just this isn't a, you can improve here.
Absolutely.
You can have better effort here. I learned this from Coach Edwards a long time ago when I first started working in Wyoming. Don't criticize the person, criticize the act. And I think once they understand that concept that you're not criticizing them, you're just trying to correct the action. That's all you're trying to do. And so when we send these tapes or these edits out, or we're watching film with our guys, it's nobody's taking anything personal. We can sit there and be truthful and have an honest conversation that's not good enough. That's not how you win. You know, this will get you beat. You know, these are the things that we talk to. You have to be transparent with everybody if you're going to have a strong culture like we do here. And I think for our guys, that's why I love coaching these guys, because we don't have those issues where guys take things seriously. I mean, to take things personally. So we send it out, we get better, we move on. It's done.
How long does it take you to build that level of trust with a new player that comes into your program? Because obviously if a kid's been there for a year or 2 years, they get to know you, they get to know what the staff's all about, they get to know what the culture's all about. But when you're talking about a freshman who comes in, or you get a transfer that comes in, how long does it take for you to build that type of relationship and that type of trust where you can have that brutal honesty with them about, look, here's where we need better effort, here's where we need you to do X, Y, or Z? How long does that take?
To be honest with you, I think it has a lot to do with the relationships you already got established within the program with your seniors and juniors, your upperclassmen, your veteran players. Because those are the guys that's going to bring those guys into the fold, because those freshmen are going to spend more time with those seniors in the upperclassmen more than they are with you. And the better your relationships are with your veteran players, and they see how you coach them, and everybody's treated equal, and everybody's getting coached hard, regardless whether you Cameron Crutwig or Lucas Williamson. You know, everybody's going to get coached the same way. And then once they see the transparency, the honesty in that, and how you coach your veteran guys, your best players, they don't have no choice but to buy in. And I'm sorry, I don't even want to use the word buy in. I want to say believe in.
Right.
They believe in what we're doing, not buy in. They believe in what we're doing. And sometimes you can have some freshmen that kind of come in and they still strong-minded a little bit and they think, you know, they average 26 points a game in high school that they're going to average 20 points a game in college. So you got to bring those guys into the fold.
Right.
But I think once they see how hard it is and how hard you coach your upperclassmen, your veteran players, and see how tough you are on them in film, when you're watching film with the team and you holding those guys accountable, I think those guys will be more willing to buy in because they see you as a coach coaching everybody the same way.
I love that. We're going to coach everybody hard. That's a great line. When I was an assistant coach at Richmond Heights with Phil Schmuck for many, many years, and I can remember numerous conversations that Phil had with parents where we'd be talking about some issue or something with the program, and Phil would always come back to that line, and he would just say, look, if your kid's going to be a part of our program, whether they're the 12th man or they're the number one player on the team, we're going to coach them all the same way. We're going to coach them hard, and we're going to have demands, and we're going to make them get better, and right. We're going to get them to buy in. And that was just something that stuck with me. And I think if you can get to the point where as a coach, as a program, as you said, you're coaching everybody the same way and you're putting demands on all your players to get better, then, as you said, players have no choice but to believe in what is going on when they see everybody being coached hard.
Right, right. And that's just the competitive environment that we have. People ask all the time, man, your environment, what is it like? It's competitive. Everything we do is about competing. Everything. So if you're not ready to compete, you're probably not going to make it. So whether that's in the classroom, we're always talking about competing, get better, whether it's film, whether it's player development, whether it's practice, whether it's in the game. It is a competitive environment and it's a lot of passion and fiery moments. And you got to be able to handle that. And I think you handle it a little bit better when you see everybody else getting treated the same way and coached the same way.
Absolutely. Do you guys chart wins and losses and stat, new stat practice, and just what do you guys do with in terms of that, in terms of creating a competitive environment within your team?
We just follow the process. Everything is about the process. Yes, we do keep charts of shooting drills and stuff like that, but at the end of the day, it's about competing inside the competing within the drill. We just want to have that energy and that passion and that competitive edge every single day. And I think that's the most important thing, because sometimes when you start charting things, it becomes, you know, it just becomes a practice.
Right.
And I think for us, what we've always tried to have was energy, passion, enthusiasm. That's the hardest thing to bring every single day to practice, you know, where it's not just, you know, a roller coaster ride. We're trying to continue to move that needle to the right as much as possible on having a competitive environment.
All right. We are just about to start another day in your life as an assistant coach at Loyola of Chicago. So we are coming close to an hour and a half. I want to wrap up with one final two-part question. And this is a question that I like to end the show with a lot of times, because I think it gets to the heart of who you are as a coach. And the first part of the question is, what is, as you look ahead, what is your biggest challenge? And you can put that in terms of a short term, you can put it in terms of long term, but just what, as you look ahead in your career, what's the biggest challenge that you think you face? And then number two, when you get up out of bed tomorrow morning, what is the biggest joy? What's the thing that puts a smile on your face when you think about being an assistant men's basketball coach at Loyola of Chicago? So your biggest challenge and your biggest joy.
I think for me personally, as an assistant coach, I got into this business to be a head coach one day. And as assistant coaches, sometimes the biggest challenge can be moving 6 inches over to the right and being able to run your own program one day. And I think the biggest challenge is, you know, having another institution or athletic director and president believe in who I am as a person, my character, my talent and my ability to run my own program one day. I think that's the biggest challenge for me. I don't know about other assistant coaches, but I think that's the biggest challenge. But I wake up, every single day, and I'm thankful that of my family, my wife and my kids, and my relationship with God, and that's the first thing that comes to mind when you say joy. And then, secondly, will probably be the opportunity that I have in front of me to impact the young men at Loyola and have the opportunity to coach them, but going to work every single day to be able to work with the staff and Coach Moser is a joy, because I'm always learning, and those guys are preparing me to one day be my own head coach. And that's hard to find in this business, when you can go to work and spend that much time with the staff for 8, 9, 10 hours a day. And you're with them probably a little bit more than you are with your own family. And you got to have joy, and you got to love those guys. You got to be in the foxhole with those guys. And I love being around them. I'm always learning, and it's a great relationship here, and it's hard to find. And that's something that I covet every single day.
It's a great answer, and I think it speaks to the theme that kind of came through the whole podcast. I think anybody who listened to that whole entire episode is not surprised at all by your answer. And before we get out of here and wrap things up, I just want to give you a chance to share how people can connect with you, how they can connect with your program there at Loyola Chicago. So if you want to share some social media or website, and then we'll put all that in the show notes as well. And then once you're done with that, I'll jump back in and we'll wrap things up.
They can connect with me anyway, in terms of my email, jkimbrough@luc.edu. And then they can also, I'm on Twitter. My Twitter handle number name is, one second, @JermaineKimbrough, KIMBROU, is my Twitter handle name. And they can reach out to me via Twitter too.
Perfect. That's awesome. And like I said, we'll throw that in the show notes so people can find it if they want to connect with you and just pick your brain or talk some hoops or whatever it might be. Maybe you got some Loyola Chicago fans out there that want to just say hello and touch base with you. And Jermaine, we cannot thank you enough for spending almost an hour and a half with us tonight at the end of what, as we know from listening to the episode, a very busy day for you. So we don't take your time lightly, and we really do appreciate it. And as a fellow Cleveland guy, it was an honor to be able to talk to you, and we really appreciate it. And to everyone who's out there listening, we appreciate you, and we will catch you on our next episode. Thanks.
Thanks for listening to the Hoopheads podcast, presented by Head Start Basketball.